It is Saturday, May 20th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today, we do the geek news, week of geek, if you will. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome your conversations with questions and comments about technology.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP.
At KUSP.org, you can find the commentaries that KUSP airs on First Person Singular each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also find information on how you can submit commentary for First Person Singular on KUSP.org.
Today in the air room, I've got Drew Meyer, as you just heard. I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll be taking your calls with questions and comments in about a half an hour, but first we're going to do some geek news. But let me get the numbers out to you to pencil them down. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS, in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I've got geeks Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control, Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance. We also have Dee Dee Hubbard over the Skype from New York. Dee Dee, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey.
Hey, you sound great. And, of course, we also have kind of a special thing today, Charlie Mansky. Charlie, is what's the new thing you're doing?
Well, we've launched the Digital Universe this week. Sounds grandiose enough, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. What does it mean?
What's it powered by?
It's powered by ManyOne. I work for a company called ManyOne, and we released today the first public viewing of our, we call it the Digital Universe. And what it is simply a Wikipedia-like project in that it's very collaborative, but the content that we're going to get in the Digital Universe will be stewarded. And so we are making associations with lots of academic institutions, and the first big portal that we're starting is the Earth Portal, and so there's lots of information relating to environmental issues and things like that. So check it out, digitaluniverse.net. And
Hang on, Charlie. Sure, I don't understand what it is yet.
Okay. Yeah, it's portals. It's a web. We're trying to corral all the information in the web and bring it through a sort of portal system. There's a hierarchical navigation tool called the UniNav, and then there is a side panel. If you go to digitaluniverse.net, you'll see whenever you go into click on one of these portals, a portal is basically a diorama window, we call it, in the center part of the screen, and then there's a series of tools on the right side of the screen, a kind of a sidebar, and there's lots and lots of links to other information on the particular topic.
Okay, but we've been seeing portals happen since the web started, kind of thing. I mean, it was definitely in the 2000 era, there was a lot of portals going
right on.
What's unique?
Why would I go here instead of, like you said, Wikipedia?
Okay. Well,
or the library.
The key attributes are the trusted, the stewarded part of it. And so, in other words, there's always going to be content experts that have the final say and the responsibility for the information. It will never have the free sort of chaotic nature of Wikipedia.
Okay, so what you're saying is you're pulling experts into a resource online.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the big piece of it.
That's
and
the biggest
and what
piece.
Are, like, right now, the first one you're launching is a medical kind of thing or an alternative?
No,
medical?
No. If you go there, the featured portals that we have right now.
I see Earth, Energy, the Arctic, Texas Environment, U.S. Government, and Salton Sea.
Exactly.
Those are just like the current hot hits, or?
They're just what we have content for.
That basically means you've got experts in those
exactly,
fields that are
yeah.
managing.
Exactly.
So I wonder how Britannica feels about this.
As a matter of fact, we're talking to Britannica.
Yeah. So is it kind of like a It's not like a blog. It's more like a journal.
It's an encyclopedia.
It's like an encyclopedia,
but we're hoping to have much more multimedia content and sort of custom web pages, and that's what I hope to be able to focus on, bringing in my science background to help scientists produce good multimedia type web pages.
Great.
So that's kind of what my job is.
And Charlie, we've had you on before because you used to work for Mozilla, and we talked about the browser and stuff, and the Mozilla kind of, well, I guess AOL kind of killed the Netscape group, if you will.
Exactly, yeah.
So you're a developer for quite a while. I'm going to invite you to just stay with us while we do this news segment. And
sure.
If you'd like to continue, that's fine. You also produce Dr. Don's show.
Right.
And I appreciate that. I love that show. Let's go ahead and do some more.
Congratulations on the launch of the Digital Universe, right?
Yeah, it just launched yesterday or?
On Thursday.
Wow.
Hooray.
You still look tired.
So
yeah,
we have an exclusive, yes.
It was a long week, yeah.
I love it when we do exclusives.
worldwide premiere right here on GeekSpeak, folks.
Speaking of exclusive, we're going to have Miles cover his news. This will be the first time that Miles is covering this news story that other people covered this week. Miles.
an alert was raised for a day zero attack for Microsoft Word. Now, in the past, we've talked on the show of telling people, do not click on attachments in email.
I've heard about that.
Well, at least for now, until this hole gets patched, I really do want to get into scare tactics. Normally don't want to do scare tactics. Normally don't want to tell people, oh my God, everything's going to be bad. But seriously, like, whenever you're opening up your email, I want you to have a sense of apprehension if you have a Windows machine.
If there's an attachment.
Yeah.
Just viewing it.
Right. And don't think of it as, oh, I can't think of anything bad about it. I want you to get into the mindset of what is right about this. If you can't think of anything that is right about it, it comes from someone that you know, that it's something that you're expecting. Unless you can think of something that's right about it, do not click on the attachment.
Coming from who you know doesn't necessarily mean anything, because if they're infected or something,
and if you're expecting it.
Yeah.
If you're like, wow, that's funny, why is that person sending me something? Don't click on it. Just,
you know, Miles,
just
I was
have like an electric shock.
Miles, last night I was hooking up with a local network, and we were talking about how viruses are kind of scary, and I was like, yeah, they're kind of scary, and I reinstalled my operating system, so I didn't have virus protection on, and we were talking about the history of it, and I recalled a story when you and I worked for Feed the Monster Media in Los Angeles, that we had a development server. And I think we were hit by the love bug, and it erased. Was it that the one that erased all JPEGs? It like made them executable viruses. Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
Okay, so basically, this virus, when you got it, and of course, if you had Outlook, you got it really easy. And it basically crawled through your file system, found any JPEGs or maybe MP3s, but probably just JPEGs, changed them to the same file name .bat. Which on some systems is hidden. So then when you go and find it, all of a sudden it's a lot smaller file. You double-click it, and it infects your machine. And the thing that was so horrible in the situation that we had was that the people that got it, some of them had write privileges and had a network share to our development environment. And just crawled through and erased our entire development environment. So yeah, they're not good things to get. And you can lose all your JPEGs and all your music, and of course also become a spam bot for those deceitful out there.
I got to say something, okay? I'm online all the time. I use nothing but Mozilla, the only reason I use to test stuff. I have never had a virus.
Never had a virus?
I've never had a virus.
That's cool.
I'm using PC Cillin now. I kind of threw out Norton, but...
But you do have to admit, though, like, we're...
I don't open attachments until...
No, but I mean, like, we're web developers.
Yeah.
When we go to a website, we are seeing things that... Even a rational, intelligent person would not see because we've been on the other side.
Right.
So take it with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you for the scare tactic. Basically, be careful about what's coming in. I'm going to go ahead and take the next news story to Didi. Didi, did you go to the Apple store today?
Yes.
And
I am I'm experiencing my first Red Bull ever. Man, this thing tastes like crap.
What does that have to do with the Apple store?
Did you have to wake up early?
Well... The Apple store that opened on Fifth Avenue today, it actually is open now forever.
What?
That's right. It's open 24/7, 365 days a year.
So far.
And for the first 24 hours, they're giving out a MacBook on the hour, every hour, until about 7 p.m. today. And so me and Joe decided that our best shot at, you know, beating the masses and maybe getting a chance at a new shiny computer was to show up at 3 a.m.
Along with everybody else in New York who thought that's a good idea.
No, actually, most people showed up right at the beginning. So there was like about 1,000 people in line.
So in other words, you wasted a few hours.
No, we went to bed for about 3 hours. Got about 3 hours of sleep. Hit the subway at 3:30 in the morning. Got there at 4.
I love New York.
Yeah. What was that like at 3:30 in the morning?
Central Park is really scary at night. don't go in there. But it's a lovely store. We entered our first contest for the 5 o'clock, the 6 o'clock, the 7 o'clock, the 8 o'clock, so on. And I was like, oh gosh, I'm tired and sleeping. I need to go back to Brooklyn so I can be on GeekSpeak.
Right on. I appreciate that. I think we all do. Well, is the store different than most other Apple stores? I feel like we're doing, I mean, this is like a clear commercial for Apple. I hate that. But at the same time, it's an interesting geeky thing.
I don't
right?
know. If fries went 24 hours, I'd want to comment on it.
If you ever have a weird layover at JFK, and you're like,
all the time.
I need wireless right now. I mean, you can always head to the Apple store, right? It's your basic Apple store, though, except it's underground, and there's this big glass cube with an Apple logo.
Wait, it's underground?
Yes.
Man, real estate's really getting expensive in New York, isn't it?
They have a glass elevator. I felt like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Nice.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Wait, now I'm stuck. What's the use of a glass elevator if you're underground?
You can see the dirt.
Well, see, all you see from above ground, right across from Central Park, is this glass cube.
Yeah, I can see
how
that.
Big is it?
I can see that.
And at night it glows, and you're like, ooh, glowing out.
How big is this cube?
The store underneath it is like 10,000 square feet. The cube, it's a big cube.
Like a story tall?
Yeah.
And is it empty?
If you go to apple.com, it's on the front page right now. So this is helping me a lot.
All right. Great. We'll all go and see the advertisement for Apple.
Well, it shows what we're talking about. A picture in 1,000 words and all
it
that.
It really is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I can tell you about the MacBook, though.
Okay, yeah. So is it any good?
The glossy screen takes some getting used to, and the keyboard, a little wacky. It's really more tactile than the other keyboards, but it doesn't. There's like space around each of the keys, which is a little weird for people who are used to touch typing and just sort of sliding across the keys. Took some getting used to, but it's speedy.
So you actually walk into the cube to get downstairs. Why'd they do this downstairs? Do you know?
It's flashy.
Yeah. And they've got a nice quad now out there that you can play around in.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And it glows at night.
All right, let's go to the next story. Drew, you want to do the next news story? You ready, man?
Well, I do have one here that's sort of Apple-esque. It has to do with Apple. It looks like people have developed a new line of the iPod. You know, the big thing about an iPod is those white headphones, the white earbuds that go in your ears, and they have the long string trailing down, and the ads, they swing around, and people stick them in their sweatshirts. You can always pick out an iPod in the street. It looks like iDiamonds is a company that's making iPod earphones that have diamonds on them. So you can buy a $958 diamond clip-on designed by an Italian jeweler in the shape of a moon, a star, and a lightning bolt for another $843. And if your wallet's not quite fat enough to do all that, you can get a rose sapphire clip-on in a couple of weeks here for $720, a real bargain.
I feel like it's Christmas early. This is wonderful news. Why do we care?
Somebody's out there thinks there's a market for this.
And you know what their problem
is? You know, maybe not in this room, but...
Maybe jewelry will come back into fashion.
A market for supporting De Beers. Wonderful.
There's no word on whether matching exercise clothes are planned. That's a little press humor for you.
Would that be like rhinestone-covered jumpsuits?
Yeah.
A comment here. Great, as if people weren't already being targeted enough for being mugged because of the white wires.
Yeah. Now you can have your ears pulled apart with diamonds in them.
I have a $200 piece of electronics in my pocket.
Silly.
All right, well, thanks for that.
Getting kind of jittery.
Yeah, don't walk into definitely don't walk into Central Park with your earbuds on, and especially if they've got diamonds on them. All right, let's go on to the next news story. I think it's Miles' turn.
Google has released their web toolkit. It's for free. It's extremely geeky, so it's hard for me to describe to someone who doesn't do development.
Do you like it?
Yes, it's ridiculously cool.
Okay. Why is it so ridiculously cool?
Because you're writing in the Java language, which is a language that a lot of people know. There's a lot of references for it. But you're not making it so that everyone has to have a Java virtual machine on their desktop or run it within their browser. What it does is you're writing in the Java code, and then you are outputting as AJAX code. In other words, it outputs a fully interactive website based upon a real programming language.
Okay, I'm going to have to play with this because you've been trying to teach me Java for, like, I don't know, how long have we known each other? 7 years? And it's always been frustrating. But AJAX, JavaScript, HTML, no problem. So why isn't this more complicated? I mean, when you say everybody knows Java, I know a lot of web developers that don't. So is it a cool
kit? Among the programming community, a lot of folks know Java.
Okay, so it could launch AJAX into even higher esteem in the world.
Right.
And presumably make really good
but
JavaScript.
But you also don't have to worry about the different browser quirks.
Ooh, that's
handled by this toolkit. You do it as a single code base, and then you output it, and there you have in a website, you know, drop-down windows and little menus and, you know, active scripting,
right,
pulling feeds and stuff like that, just built into this Java API.
Have you built anything yet?
No.
Okay, this is what I want. It probably has
See, you're going to tell me to work on
whatever.
Something with GeekSpeak.
Yeah, whatever.
It's going to say no.
Potting down miles.
Homer.
All right. So, but you know what I've wanted forever is I want callers and emailers, they always tell us where they are, like what city they're in. You know, we're going up and down the Central Coast of California, and I'd love to map that so that we can see, you know, who and where people are listening to GeekSpeak. I mean, of course, we also have Lee from Amsterdam. It'd be kind of cool to have, like, you know, the Google Maps API with dots for people that call.
Google Maps or Google Earth?
Google, well, both, actually. So get on it, Miles.
Whatever Woo-hoo! You can do, Miles.
Extensions.
So whatever I can do. I'm saying there's almost going like, oh, I'd love to do this. Like, Miles, you would love to do this, won't you?
So wait a minute. So for us hardware guys, this basically means you can do web development faster and easier and better?
If you know Java.
If you know Java.
If you know Java, okay.
It's basically taking all of those programmers that make horrible UIs and giving them some tools so they don't have to worry about browser quirks anymore.
Yeah. That's cool.
Has anybody compared this to Ruby on Rails' RJS templates?
I'm sure someone has, but I don't know.
You know, I haven't seen the RJS templates, Didi, but I'm a Rails developer to some degree. Are they good? Because it's been kind of complicated to do this well.
It lets you write JavaScript based on your Ruby objects in Rails, so it's
sounds really
similar to what Google just did.
Yeah.
Well, no. Bear in mind that Rails is a server side technology. Everything is done on server side. It's generating the code, whereas this one is just a client side technology making the UI.
Yeah, but it's got the Java objects are going to have to know what kind of services are available on the server side. Watch slowly.
But HTTP.
Guys, I can feel it happening.
I know. We're getting geeky, aren't we? Does that happen every time on the show? I think it does. Let's do the next news story. Miles, thank you for the information. I'd like to see an application by next week. Drew, Didi, it's actually your turn. Didi, you got another news story besides your experience of Subways and Apple?
Apple and the Big Apple. I just got it. Sorry, Didi.
Oh, jeez.
I just got it. Sorry.
I don't know. ABC's been doing streaming of their television shows, and it's really popular. 3 million viewings since its inception at the beginning of this month. So
they're just streaming their normal online television. They're just streaming their normal television.
Yeah. So if you missed Alias, per se, like a show that I enjoy, which is, you know, it's ending its season and it's getting really tense, and you're like, oh no, I missed it. I don't know what's gonna happen. You could always watch it online now. It's kind of cool.
So
for free.
For free.
And you see all the advertisements.
It's got advertisements in that you can't skip.
And it's on-demand streaming, basically. So all those shows just stay up there, and then you can listen to anyone. But once you start it, it plays for the hour or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
You can always download on iTunes or some other services and get them without commercials. But,
right, but
this
then you have to
nice
pay for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Didi, for that information. I don't, you know, use television because, of course,
well, this
I'm
might be a way to
guy.
Watch TV.
But if I guess every once in a while, if I want to do a show, I could watch a show that way. Thank you, Didi, for that information. Drew, I'm going to go to you, sir.
Well, it's exciting for me because I work for a company called Network Appliance. We make storage products. And this just yesterday, we made an announcement in a magazine called Computer Reseller News about a new small-medium business division of the company called the Store Vault division that I'm a part of. So
what will you be doing in the store division? Well,
the store vault division is targeting, like I said, the SMB storage space or the small medium businesses. This is people, companies that are, you know, say 30 to 500 people that are looking for a device that can store information for them. And Network Appliance makes devices that store information for really big companies like Google and Oracle and giant massive machines that are very, very solid in performance and very, very stable. And the whole point of this is that NetApp's bringing that technology down into a more accessible market space for people who don't have as much money.
So basically, okay, so you're really going, these features that large corporations, they need this stuff all the time. In reality, everybody needs it at this point. So you're trying to just package all those larger services into easier cubes, if you will. So,
speaking of advertisements.
Well, no, I think
hey, now,
it's pretty,
not every day. Okay.
I mean, you know, everybody knows that Google and IBM and Microsoft have these giant solutions for their businesses. Yeah. Not just their services, but their businesses themselves have backup redundancy, a whole bunch of administration help and all that. Mm-hmm. But there's businesses with 300 people in them where they might have one IT person.
Exactly.
And they're struggling to try to do all these different things. I mean, it's hard to be abreast on everything that's out there to make your network safe, like viruses, for example. So this you're going to be handling the storage aspect of that?
Yeah, so this product allows a person exactly like you just described, a single IT person, to deal with all the backup challenges that they have, the archiving and the restoring, and just the ability to store lots of data and grow it over time using the same technology that these massive, huge companies have accessible to them. Mm-hmm. For their own small business.
Cool.
So it's a big deal.
All right. Thank you, Drew. I've got time for one more news story. I think I'm going to pass off to Miles. I think you had a lot of stories today, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Good.
There's a news story that's come up through the Associated Press saying that ISPs are warning that high-definition video could choke the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say I'm a little skeptical.
We're talking about bandwidth concerns here?
Right. Because right now, right now I don't have any internet access. It's a whole other story.
You've got to pay your phone bill, man.
Dude, that's a whole other story. Anyway.
Go on.
But our choices are, you know, for high speed, you know, quote high speed, is DSL and cable. So what, max of 6 megabits or something along those lines a second. Now I think of Korea or Japan, where they're selling internet access for a pipe of say 50 to 200 megabits
mm-hmm.
a second.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I do some basic math on a napkin and go like, 100 is 20 times,
you know, it's really,
5.
It's really interesting, Miles, because when you said I'm skeptical, I'm like, how can you know that? I mean, of course, if everybody started using HDTV, but that's the point is that there's other people that have the bandwidth and they're doing fine, and there's no way that even if everyone started doing HDTV, we'd get anywhere near what Japan is doing for traffic. That's basically what you're saying, right?
Right. Yeah. But I also think of HDTV, one of the things that one pundit was reading a while back was saying was BitTorrent or peer-to-peer yeah. applications were helping that, because an ISP, before they go off to the general internet, within their own network has a non-trivial amount of bandwidth.
Sure.
They have their own local gigabit lines.
Yeah.
Like a gigabit LAN you would have at your company.
Sure.
And if you have BitTorrent, then a lot of that traffic goes within the ISP itself, because BitTorrent is going to look for peers that, you know, have a good network path.
In fact, the ISP to cut down traffic could do a generic BitTorrent server with lots of data in their warehouse, right? So, or in their storage facility, so they wouldn't even be hitting their phone lines or their DSL lines.
Right,
so,
yeah, or not as much.
Yeah,
I mean, you'll
right.
still have some traffic, but then I go, well, no, this doesn't work if you have high definition always coming from the same source and they're always coming from, you know, in other words, how the model works right now.
So you're basically saying this: the concern that people are spreading, you don't feel is justified.
I think that they're right, but only in the view of how they have traffic going right now.
Right, right. So really technology can solve the problem if we start getting into a stranglehold.
Right.
And just like paying your phone bill solves the problem of keeping your DSL line. All right. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Our phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Rick Fellman awaits your call with questions or comments. He pipes them in through AIM or YAM or something like that to us so we can take them. So please give him a call and ask a question. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us.
GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service...
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah, you do Cruise Out, because I did Business with Pleasure, so let's see.
All right, let's
oh, no, you don't do that one. You do that one. This one right here.
KUSP co-sponsors How and Why to Live Sustainably. The Foundation of Sustainable Living presents an evening of presentations and conversations to start the process of building a sustainable future. Thursday, May 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Live Oak Grange, 1900 17th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Information is available at 877-675-0604.
This program is supported by Business with Pleasure, providing local and nationwide internet services. See, I should have just had you read this one too, Drew. I'm horrible. Go ahead. Yeah, you've got a beautiful voice. It's like a butter voice. Now let's see.
It was the sustainability event I was at last night at the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Were you there?
I was. It was superb. Fantastic. In fact, I wanted to do a news article on it.
Cool.
GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering DSL broadband computer rentals and tune-ups. Cruise.io has retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. You can join us now, just like Mary has done, and will be joining us momentarily, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or go online to geekspeak.org. And since Mary called in, which you can do as well if you'd like, let's take her call from Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak, Mary. What's your call? What's your question?
I listen just for fun. Most of the time, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds fun. So I listen.
You sound like every one of our audience members. Go on.
And now I just have this very simple question, which is both Geek Speak and Ask Dr. Dawn, I'd love, if I miss a show, to be able to hear it later. Only it's looking to me like I need an MP3 player or an iPod to do that. I used to just be able to download it to my computer and put it on disk and listen to it in the car.
You burn a CD?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it looks like that's not what's happening.
You can still do that. It sounds like your computer's probably changed a little bit. But you can definitely copy them down your computer and then burn the CD. The trick would be to be able to play to have your burning software understand the MP3 file.
Yeah.
So,
since Charlie, which software are you using for your burning?
Do you know?
Oh, good. Great.
That's going to be easy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so first off,
beside every single show that we have, there's a link that says 24 kilobits per second MP3 audio. Okay. Just download that and away you go.
And Charlie, what about on Dawn's site?
Yeah, exactly. For the Ask Dr. Dawn show, you would go to askdrdawn.com and we have the show there. And so if you right click, you know, and do save link as, you know, then you will end up just downloading the MP3.
And same thing with GeekSpeak.
Yeah.
And so I shouldn't be put off by the fact that it says MP3. I can still save it to a CD and play it.
Yeah, so what's happening now? Yeah. So now let's talk about Roxio. Are you Windows or Mac?
Windows.
Okay, so in Roxio, it does some things of, like, you can have different types of CDs. You can have data CDs or audio CDs. You need to make sure you pick audio CD.
Good.
Then it will convert the MP3 and burn a CD. If you pick data CD, then you'll get a copy of that file on your computer, which your car stereo won't be able to play.
Right. Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Although there are, in fact, car stereos that can play MP3 CDs.
Mine does, yeah.
It's true, mine does, too.
She might not have one. Amazing. Yeah. She wants to go to all this trouble to listen to a show that she really has no idea what we're talking about.
Well, you know,
we rule.
She's being polite. She listens to Dr. Dawn, and she's getting help from us.
Yeah, we're the show that comes on after Dr. Dawn, so we get audience.
You're exactly right. Well, thank you, Mary. You made us feel good anyway.
Thank you very much, Mary, for the call.
Yeah, bye.
Well, if you'd like to ask about Dr. Dawn's show, you're welcome to go ahead and give us a call. The technical side of it, of course, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Let me clarify what kind of calls we'll take today. If it's a problem that you're having that has to do with the technology, or if it's a comment you have about technology, you're welcome to call us. Again, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Yeah, we do. We're podcasting, archiving and podcasting GeekSpeak and Dr. Dawn and quite a few other shows. Talk of the Bay, Live at Lunch segment now I'm blanking on that. It's a great live music segment every day of the week. And that's being recorded as well. They're all online. They're all those MP3 files. And it's kind of a cool way to listen to shows. I've been subscribing now to Dr. Dawn's RSS feed because, of course, I'm prepping for GeekSpeak before GeekSpeak and can't really do that listening live. So I'm always hearing it a day later. But it's a great resource. And, of course, Dr. Dawn is on NPR.
I was just thinking, if you're podcasting, right, and so you're using iTunes or something like that, it puts that MP3 file somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
Under the pod iPod or whatever the software is installed, right?
Right.
So there's some. So if you can find the MP3 file from a podcast, you could also use that as a source.
Yeah, you know, if you're using
to do a CD burn.
Since we have quite a few Apple listeners, and you can use iTunes on Windows as well. When you subscribe to a podcast through the iTunes Music Store, it actually saves that file to your computer.
Right.
You can also make a playlist of those and burn a CD from them. So you could take, you know, a month of. Well, actually, Geek Speak and Dr. Don are both an hour long. So if you're making a normal CD, it's a CD per show.
Exactly.
But, of course, you could just put on Dr. Don and then put on the last, you know, 15 minutes of Geek Speak, because that's all you really need to be confused, and burn a CD that way. of course, yeah, the portability is a nice feature, and it's so frustrating because all these MP3 players are all selling different things and the complications, and really you got to play with each one to really get a feel for it. We need to get a whole bunch in the air room and kind of talk about which ones are good. That's a difficult topic, I think. I mean, a really difficult thing to handle. We're going to go ahead and Marjorie from Ben Lomond. I think that's who's calling. Who in Ben Lomond is talking to us today?
Hello.
Mardine, yes.
You there?
Mardine?
Yes, Mardine. Exactly. Very good.
Okay, what's your question?
Well, actually, it got harder to hear you now on my phone. But what I'm calling about is that I have a 5-year-old Dell.
Oh, you know what? Turn your radio down, unfortunately.
No, my radio's not on.
Okay. Go on.
It's just that the sound height, you know, the level got softer when you put me on the air, so I can't hear you as well.
But, okay.
So we've been working with IBM based systems for 20 years, and I'm now thinking about adding a Mac, and I want to be able to do most of my graphics on the Mac.
Okay.
But there's the latest version of CorelDRAW, the X3.
Mm. Sure.
It looks very attractive, and we were doing a little research last night, and it appears not to be available for the Mac. Do you know about that, or when it might be available?
CorelDRAW?
Mm-hmm.
Miles?
Why again do you want to use CorelDRAW?
I've been using it for 20 years. I'm very familiar with it, and the X3 version that came out was had a lot of improvements that were made specifically for my industry.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume they're not making it anymore for the Mac. And they might have made the change when they did iOS 10, but I am just, you know, shooting in the dark here. But Drew happens to have great access to the internet, and he's learning all about it at this moment.
Skimming.
Yeah, I would assume that since you've already probably researched this, that you're out of luck on the Macintosh at this point for Corel.
Well, almost every other CorelDRAW version is available for Mac.
But this version isn't.
But
you're talking about
one is
Corel Drawings or CorelDRAW?
Well, the CorelDRAW suite. You know, it includes Photo, Paint, and.
Well, it's possible they're just not released it yet, and that they're releasing in two different phases. You know,
yeah, send a note to Corel, and their product manager will get back to you and say, yes, this is on the roadmap, or good luck, lady, never get it.
Okay.
Yeah, go into the PR section of Corel's site and find the person that's the product manager for it.
Okay.
They'll be pretty responsive. It's their job to make you really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry about that. I think you're doing the very wise thing before buying a different type of computer to check to see if the work you want to do can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's highly recommended.
It's a kind of a scary thing to commit, you know, to switching over to Mac from IBM when you've been on it for so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might consider...
Is there anything else in the application space?
Some other program? Because Corel is not known as a... Well, they're not as big as Adobe, I say that.
That's true. They're definitely not used as much. But in the sign industry, they sort of cornered the market 20 years ago when all the printers and plotters came out, and Corel was the first one to develop a good interface.
And you're making signs?
Yeah.
And why do you want to change to a Mac?
I've heard a lot. I know a lot of people who use them, and they're so much more stable. And, you know, I have constant crashing issues, and just, you know, my existing system is old.
Yeah.
So I'm...
Well, you'd be surprised what a new Windows machine is like. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I'm debating back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
And if I can't get X3, I probably will stick with the IBM system. But, you know, I
would
buy
also,
a computer every year. So
I'd also be concerned about getting a new Macintosh and dealing with dealing with your plotters and printers.
Well, actually, I don't run any plotters or printers.
Okay.
So So I'm doing purely design.
And have you talked to your printing bureaus to find out if they can handle, if they have any problems with you sending the Macintosh files?
Most of them have both.
Okay.
IBM and Mac, so.
Well, I wouldn't switch over to Macintosh if your main application's not supported.
Yeah.
You could, of course, get one of the new Intels and do the old dual boot thing and run Corel in Windows, but then you've got a Windows machine that you paid too much for.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thank
not
you.
Not necessarily with the new MacBook.
That's true. The MacBook's not that expensive.
And well, it's still Mac Mini.
But still booting back and forth. That's a pain.
Martin, thank you very much for the call. Yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Martin. We have some lines open. You're welcome to give us a call if you'd like questions or comments about technology answered by us. 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-KUSP. All right, so, SoCal. I love SoCal. Okay, Dinah, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, how are you doing?
Quite well. What's your question?
I have a Fujitsu laptop, 7010. It's one of those little itty-bitty ones, real small. And when I have Outlook open and Word open and Access open, everything runs fine. But if I open up more than one Word file, and the moment I go from one Word file to another Word file, Word just goes away. It absolutely crashes.
Okay.
And I've upped the memory. I've maxed out the memory on the computer. I've gone to WordSite and downloaded any patches and updates and service packs, and I don't have this problem on any other of my laptops that I run Word on, and I don't understand why it's doing this. And when I boot Word back up, my files will be there recovered. So it's not like I'm losing information, but it's just such a hassle to keep rebooting Word if I try to have more than one Word file open.
Do you use any other applications on this machine where you have two windows open of the same application? Like, do you use it to browse the internet and have two Windows browsers?
Yeah, if I have anything else open, I will put on Internet Explorer, what have you. None of those crash. And the only thing that ever crashes is Word, and it only crashes if I try to go from one file to another.
Okay, so Miles, here's what's the technical term for this?
There's a DLL that's corrupted or missing. There's something in there, something's... Yeah, messed up within the Word program itself. A file is either missing or...
How does she solve this problem?
Reinstalls Word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
So there's this thing called a dynamic link library, a DLL, and you'll see those files listed in your operating system as a .dll extension.
Uh-huh.
And that file is a library of instructions, and when Word is asked to execute a task, it goes and refers to this library and says, this is what I'm supposed to do, and it comes back and does it. So if that library is broken, then it tries to do the job, can't find the instructions on how to do the job, freaks out, and you have to restart it.
Or gets the wrong instructions.
Yeah, or does something completely wrong, yeah.
And the reason I was asking if other applications you can open multiple windows in is that I was wondering if that DLL was a Windows DLL that was broken or if it was a Word DLL.
Right.
And it sounds like it's a Word DLL because you can open multiple browsers of the same application type and be okay.
Right. As a general rule, if one program crashes and none of the other ones do, then you're going to have a problem with that one program. If a bunch of different applications crash, especially, and always at the same place, it's usually an operating system problem.
So the way
it's different with Word, though. I mean, Word is special because it's kind
a Microsoft
of
product.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's not as isolated from the operating systems as most.
I'd agree. I think Microsoft apps in general are different, but at the same time, they adhere to some best practices of Microsoft that some application developers might not.
Right, but what I mean, though, is like if only one program is giving you a problem, then that's
it's probably that.
Yeah.
So let's do this. I mean, one thing to test is, of course, try Excel and see if you can open multiple browsers in Excel. If it also crashes, then it's a little more vague what's going on.
No, I can tell you it doesn't. It
okay,
doesn't
great.
Crash with Excel.
All right, so
or
this is how you do this. You go
do you,
into.
Do you have the CDs?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So this is how you do it. You go into the control panel and you add remove programs and you pick Word. And then it's going to come up and it's going to be kind of different interface than just removing it. You're going to be able to manage it. Remove all of Word.
Okay.
Restart your machine.
Uh-huh.
And then go back into the same place, actually, and add it back in from there.
The add remove program.
And then, or you could stick the CD in and it will start automatically.
You could also, I think if you just double click on that, it'll actually prompt you to repair. Won't it?
Yeah, that's probably
so
instead
of, no, she's
done
that.
Oh, you did do that? Oh, okay.
You got to yank it. In fact, if I was doing this, I would yank the entire Office suite. I'd pull it all out, unless you're doing with Outlook, in which case... Be careful about your mail. But I would erase all of the Windows suite, the Office suite, and then restart the machine, and then go back in and load it all back in again.
So if I delete the Office suite, which includes Outlook, I would lose all my emails?
No, you
no,
won't.
But that's, okay. It's, you, obviously, your email is important to you, right?
Well, I've just got stuff on there that I'd like to keep, but it's not that important.
Okay, so this
so
is...
copy that onto a CD before you do this exercise.
Do you back up?
Okay.
Do you back up regularly?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Good. Oh, wonderful.
Okay, well, the document that is the Microsoft... is the Outlook document is called a .pst document. You uh-huh. might not be able to find that because you might have extensions hidden. But under Documents and Settings, under your account name, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. You got to make sure that stuff's being backed up and your email's in there. And okay. whenever you do backups, don't have other applications running, especially like Outlook, because then that file has an open handle on it and you might have errors in backing up. So Dana, when you do your backup, make sure you have no applications running.
The simplest thing is to go into Outlook and in the file menu, there'll be a choice on how to back up your files.
Okay.
And just Word will walk you through that, and it'll ask you where you want to put them, and you just copy them there, and then you reinstall Office, and then you go to that same file menu. There'll be a choice to restore, and you go to the CD and restore the stuff back.
Yeah. But what you'll find most likely is when you remove all of them Office Suite, at some point it might prompt you and say, "Get rid of your specific files." In which case, don't. And most likely, when you install the suite back, it'll find your email again, and everything will be fine.
Miles, something just occurred to me with regard, because it's Word. Have you done an antivirus check recently?
Oh yeah, I mean I do that once a week, and I've done the spyware stuff, and yeah, it's just been really frustrating for about a year now.
Okay. How old is the computer?
Sure. I got it last fall, actually.
Oh, it should be
fine. Thinking update graphics drivers. It's surprising how many times that's
true,
the problem.
Actually, graphics drivers for... But since
there's one program...
Yeah, I know. Unlikely, yeah. But... Yeah.
But, you know, it might be caching a whole bunch of information when it switches between the two documents that are messing things up. The reason why Miles asked about viruses and such for just Word is that Word has a macro language in it, and there are viruses that just exist in Word and Excel apps and don't actually infect your machine in general.
Would Norton pick that up?
Yeah, you'd be fine with that. So you don't have that problem.
And you're running Norton, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that was a fun call with Diane. Thank you. Well, Diana.
Thank you so much. I look forward to the solution.
I hope it works out.
Yeah, good luck.
Let us know. Send us an email if it works or not. And let us
I
know.
Sure will.
Thanks
thank you
for the
again.
Call. Bye-bye. Rick Philman's waiting for calls and questions and comments about technology, and we will take them on air. You can ask about anything you'd like. We got like 15 more minutes, so please do. 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-KUSP. Miles?
Looks like we have an email from Richard in Moab. Sorry, Miles. Go ahead.
No, you're already started.
All right. This is pretty quick. He's wondering how you can set program access and defaults for a Windows 95 machine. First of all, my question is, Rick, let's get you off Windows 95. That's over 10 years old. But
which means Microsoft is not supplying any patches for it, even security patches. It's a bad idea.
You're vulnerable.
What do you think he means by set program access and defaults?
I've heard
that
term.
Well, you could do that in later versions of Windows. There's something under Add Remove Programs where you can say... my main instant messenger client is not Messenger. It's
Yahoo.
Instant Messenger.
You can do it for browsers. You can do it for graphic software. So you can automatically, if you click a bitmap, then it'll automatically open up Adobe Photoshop instead of the usual Microsoft Paint. But I don't know how to do it in 95.
There's, if I remember correctly, there's like something where you specify what files open what. I can't really remember the widget for it, but there is a place where... you can specify file tools. I think you'd find it under your general Windows Explorer options, tools, or file options. And in there, you can specify like URL and specify something other than Internet Explorer. But it's like on a low level, so it takes a lot of tinkering.
It takes a lot of tinkering, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that's not a very helpful answer, but good luck, Rick.
So basically go into the registry if you want to start messing with 95.
Don't recommend it.
You don't actually need the registry, but it's not a simple answer, and something simpler would be just to update your operating system.
But not if he's an old OS or doesn't want to pay a whole bunch for XP.
Try Ubuntu.
Oh, yeah,
switch
totally.
To Linux. Yeah. That will solve all your problems.
Well, no, but it would get him out of this security problem and it would get him out of the... default program stuff.
Because in all honesty, if you're running on Windows 95 at this point, you are
You're big, asking for trouble.
Big yep. fat bullseye on you.
Unless you're not doing any internet stuff.
Unless you're not connected to the internet, which is very
It's possible. It's possible.
We're sending email.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to write back and give us some more information, Rick, we'll be here for a little bit longer.
Hopefully we'll be able to help you more than yeah. say get rid of that operating system. It's horrible.
Ripping on you for your OS.
I don't know. From Monterey? Let me get the phones up.
Well, let's see.
Welcome to Geek Speak.
Michael, are you in Monterey? Let's see. We're working it.
Michael, hello? Oh, you know, let me push the button. Hi, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Technology problems?
Technology problem. Yes.
No, actually, I was just asking if you guys were having any
The thing that's so frustrating is we can't call anybody about it because we're the people that need to answer the call.
I've got pretty much sure that I have a hijacked computer. It's a Windows XP.
So first of all, what makes you think that you have a hijacked computer?
Continued crash. And the blue screen crashing, and then it changes my homepage changes and goes through a site, and then in the internet options there's a remote address, and it changes the proxy setting server.
Do you have your radio on?
No.
So okay, more technology. Okay. Current.
Well, so go on. Sorry.
Going on for quite a while, and I changed the added the the disk, deleted everything, the OS, and it seemed to crash all the time with Norton. So then I did the McAfee and dropped the Norton, and I get a prompt on my on the webroot sweep too that it might be a hijacked address. And on the McAfee, where you can trace the computers that are hitting you, he keeps coming up the same ones before it crashes, the same addresses.
Hmm. Well, Miles, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that sounds like you're pretty accurately just diagnosed this.
Yeah.
What's he do, Miles?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well, I don't know if you want to hear this answer.
Burn the machine?
You back up your important data and you reinstall the OS. Yeah. You clean it off.
Yeah.
This thing is smart enough.
Could it be hiding? Because what keeps coming back is a video device driver is one of the crash things, and the other one is just a general device driver.
Well, it's really... it could be a variety of things. It could be a virus that just goes in and just is running with some main system files. It could be even worse, and it could be a rootkit, in which case you're effectively not getting rid of it. Because even though there's some utilities that can try to get rid of it, it's built into the lowest levels of your operating system. And really the only way to be sure is to back up your data and reinstall.
Yeah, I have data already backed up that I needed. My question is, if I reinstall and I have the same problem, which seems to have happened before,
it's really important that you reinstall a very specific way. You have to wipe the hard drive when you reinstall. So lots of times when you reinstall, it's just going to say repair Windows, and you're like, yeah, it won't work. I would actually format the hard drive. You've got to make sure that data that you have, that you want, is not on that drive, though.
I totally understood. I've done that a couple times, but I always do delete. I do the delete option and then reinstall everything.
And you're running XP?
XP.
Okay, and...
Do not be connected to the internet when you install Windows.
Right, so before you do that reinstall, download Service Pack 2.
I have Service Pack 2.
Okay. Good. So that when you reinstall, that you have a firewall set up and your antivirus software installed before you ever connect to the internet.
Yeah, don't connect to the internet.
And then the first thing you do once you connect to the internet is download all the patches from Microsoft. Patching the operating system.
The whole thing started when I tried to do the Norton Works, and there was a period of time when it was loading when it wasn't protected, and that was actually.
Are you sure that
ago.
The Norton Works you have is a real Norton Works and not an infected app?
Yeah, it came directly from the company, downloaded from the company site.
Okay. You got a doozy, but well, the one thing you can get out of it.
The one thing I got to say, though, is if you've downloaded stuff like Service Pack 2 or Norton Works to your computer and you're an infected computer, those things could now be infected. Do you follow?
Yeah, sure. That's my question. I wondered if my backup info is
your backup
infected.
Info might be infected, but the trick is that if you have applications, any applications are untrustworthy at this point on your machine. So if it's a document, you're okay, but if it's an application, don't use it. I know that's really horrible, but the one thing you want to do, this is really crucial, is you get a real disk of the virus protection software. You get the real disk of Service Pack 2, or make sure you've got a clean of that. You erase your hard drive. You reinstall off the Windows XP, then the Service Pack 2, then the virus protection software that you know is clean. Then you stick in your CD that has all your backup stuff on it, and you scan that with Norton. So you know that nothing on that, that before you put it on your machine, is clean. And then everything that you want to put on the computer, scan first. And that's the way to make your life safer.
I mean, it really is a lot of work to go through, but unfortunately, you're already the target. You're
past the point.
Gotta do it.
It sounds like it might be better to have professionals do this. It might be.
It's a pretty big project. Unless you really like doing this stuff, it's going to take you a while.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're past the point of an ounce of prevention. You're now in the pound of cure.
Yep.
And it's pounding on you right now.
Michael, cure.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks for your help, guys.
We're going to take Alex from Salinas. Welcome to Geek Speak. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have this little problem, and it's been bugging me for the last 3 days. I have Juno, and all the time I try to dial up to Juno, it redials. And I thought maybe my account with them was bad or something. So I called them, and they said my account is good, but I should try to go ahead and erase the program that I have, the Juno program, and then reinstall it. And I did, but I tried to get back online, and I couldn't. It just keeps on redialing.
So you're using dial-up, and you're using Juno, which is a free internet service provider?
Yes.
Yeah, so it sounds
so
like...
you're not paying for a lot of support here, huh?
It sounds like you probably don't have the phone number in Juno set up correctly. So what's going to happen with these little dialers is that the first thing they do is kind of dial an 800 number, and it's possible that you've got an older 800 number picked that's not actually Juno's, and so it just keeps on calling that number to try to get the information on your local calls.
Does somebody answer the phone?
Yes.
Is it like a real person saying hello, hello?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the right number.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it has so many numbers. It has Carmel, it has Aptos, it has Monterey.
It keeps on dialing
different numbers.
Yeah, but if you're connecting through dial-in, it should never dial a number that has someone, a human being answering.
Yeah, it'll always be answered by a computer.
So the trick, I think, at this point is to look in the Juno interface to find where the phone numbers that it's supposed to call are. Go to somebody, call a friend, or go to a friend's house that has internet access that's working right now.
Uh-huh.
And go to the Juno site and find the local call that you actually want to use, the phone number, because they're going to list all their phone lines.
Okay.
You get that number, then you go and back to the Juno application and just force it to only call that one. And then you're going to be okay.
Because you don't know that the application you have may have an outdated database of numbers in it, and it doesn't know any better. So you need to go to their live website, get the current number for your location, and force it to use that.
Yeah, they might not have paid their phone bill.
Yeah, well, I'm in big trouble because if I don't solve this real quick, then I can't register my two children for ID CAP.
Ooh. Oh,
are
man.
You, are you going to do
yeah.
it?
Go to the library. Get on the internet today.
Yeah, library has free internet access.
Thank you so much. That's a good call, too, because then his kids can solve the problem. Anything. Kids are so much better about this stuff than we are. All right. You know what? I think we're going to go ahead and go to...
Is it Elizabeth quickly?
I think we're going to have to say goodbye to calls because we're running out of time.
Right.
So thank you, everyone, that's on the line. We have a lot of people that didn't get to it. You're welcome to send us email. We will address you during the week. We love to do that. We won't be taking any more calls today. Let's see. You're listening to, this is KOSP, and you're listening to Geek Speak, and this program is made possible by Santa Cruz Electronics. Santa Cruz Electronics offers an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arnaldo, streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org.
Stay tuned for Castle Cottage with Julie Edwards sitting in for Susan Freeman. Today's show is all about children's and young people's theater with guest actors and singers from all over Santa Cruz County.
Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used by permission. The Geeks This Morning, that was Drew Miles. Drew, sorry about that, guys. We have Miles Elam, Drew Meyer, Dee Dee Hubbard from New York, and Charlie Mansky joined us for the show. Thank you all. We'll be back next week. We're going to be talking about JavaScript next week with the Blue Man. TheManInBlue.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. Yay. I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned now for Castle Cottage, but first, the Slow County Report.